You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Porter Stansberry, welcome to the show.
Man, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here today. We've had to reschedule this a couple of times, but I think the backdrop that exists today, February 3rd, 2025, is much more exciting. We're officially two weeks into Trump's second term as president, and it's been an all-on blitzkrieg in terms of him just getting into office and spouting off executive orders and throwing the tariff word around pretty liberally the first 2 weeks. Colombia, obviously over the weekend. We had Canada and Mexico. Looks like this morning, Mexico's president, she conceded that she would send some National Guard, Mexican National Guard members to the border to help protect it. I think starting there with the tariffs, I think that's a big question on everybody's mind. Is this a good strategy? Is it simply a bargaining tactic that Trump is using, or will he go follow through and actually apply these tariffs and have an effect on the U.S. economy?
Yeah, a great question. And, you know, I just can't tell how much of it is bluster and how much of it is, you know, sincere. I don't think it's going to be possible to replace the income tax, for example, with a tariff regime. I think if we try to do that, it would cause massive economic problems because of the supply chains, how complicated they are in this day and age. And I just I'm concerned that most people don't realize that tariffs are taxes, and what we desperately need is less government, not more government. And I was kind of surprised to see so many otherwise conservative people celebrating the creation of a new government revenue entity. You know, when Trump says he's going to start the external revenue group. And I was like, whoa, you know, I hope that doesn't really materialize. But I also would say that to the extent that if it were possible to generate enough revenues with tariffs as opposed to income taxes, it would certainly be beneficial to the economy in one way, which is that it would be a tax on consumption instead of a tax on earnings and savings. And so in that regard, it would be a very big improvement. But I just don't think it's practical because of the intricacies of supply chains. I don't think people realize how many times things go back and forth across borders in North America. So tariffs with Canada and Mexico is a really bad idea for our economy overall. And it won't just hurt Canada and Mexico, although it may hurt them worse because they're smaller economies. But it'll be very bad for America too. So I'm hopeful that that it's bluster and, you know, a negotiating tactic that will lead to a better trading regime between Mexico and Canada and not just more taxes for us to pay.
Agreed there. I think a lot of people are hearkening back to the McKinley era, late 19th century in America, where most of the revenue was from tariffs. But I think while that situation would be preferable, I think we have to recognize that the state of the U.S. economy, particularly our debt, is such that we're implementing that in a quick fashion is not going to be easy. And I think that's the question that's been lingering in my mind. It seems like the debt situation that was handed to Trump, particularly with the national debt and how Janet Yellen messed up the treasury markets by overloading the front end with the 10-year and the 30-year trading where they are and all the debt that we have to roll over. It seems like Trump's coming into office fighting with one hand tied behind his back because of this situation. That's just, I don't think anybody has an exact answer, but it seems like there is a very small hole in a needle that needs to be threaded if there's going to be any sort of quote unquote soft landing that Trump hopes to manufacture.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see if they can refinance $10 trillion this year without resorting to quantitative easing or other kinds of tomfoolery. I wouldn't want to be the Treasury Secretary right now. That's a very difficult task. And it implies much higher interest rates. It implies crowding out a lot of private investment. And given the weakness in commercial real estate, it's a particularly bad time to require so much capital to fund the government. So those are big hurdles that he's going to have to face. I just don't think that radically higher taxes is the best solution. I think that Elon Musk is really working hard to root out a whole bunch of corruption and very wasteful spending that's going on. And I hope that he'll be able to reduce it by at least $1 trillion. But I want you to think about how unprecedented that would be. I mean, when's the last time government spending actually declined in nominal terms? I don't think it's happened during my lifetime. So that would be a really, really unusual outcome. I mean, I'm very hopeful. I wouldn't bet against Elon. But I just think that expectations are set right now so that apparently, Trump is going to be able to put enormous new tariffs on trade without having an economic problem. He's going to be able to somehow refinance $10 trillion without having to raise taxes or see much higher inflation. Like he's kind of like walking on water in people's expectations. And he does have a really good cabinet, and he does have both houses of Congress. And if there's a way for us to thread that needle, maybe he will be able to. But I'm very concerned that this is all happening with a backdrop of equity markets trading in ways that are very, very unusual and very dangerous. So not only do you have the U.S. economy and our government funding requiring a miracle to navigate, but you've also got 10% of, 10 companies in the S&P 500 that now make up, something like 50% of the total index's value. You've got this enormous concentration of equity value and a very small number of companies. And I do think that the top 10% is now actually 75% of the index. So it's not just the enormous valuation of the top 10 stocks. It's the enormous overvaluation of the largest companies in the index, which is really a consequence of the nature of index investing, where the larger the market cap is, the more of the index it controls. And when everybody hits the feeder bar into their 401ks every month, it's getting allocated so that the bigger stocks keep getting bigger. And of course, you can imagine that happens during a bull market, but eventually reaches a peak, and then there could be a really big problem. So I'm hopeful that the new administration will be able to put our country on a much sounder financial footing, but I don't think it's going to be possible for them to pull this off without some kind of major reset to the financial markets. I just think it's very unlikely. And so I've been counseling people to be maximum conservative with their allocations, including holding at least 25% in cash, and holding a large allocation to gold as well.
Yeah. It's almost as if, I wish internally, what you just described, it seems mathematically that the chickens are going to come home to roost, and we're going to have to confront this massive debt problem, this large concentration of capital in these stocks that you just mentioned. And it almost would be preferable, but it's hard because of how markets react today to any small announcement by anybody, but just be like, hey, the situation is so bad, we're going to have to eat some hard medicine and stomach some volatility and some repricing in the short term. And on the back end of that, we're going to build out our energy infrastructure. That's something you look over to China, Russia. They are completely beating us when it comes to energy build out, energy usage per capita, and the amount of generation that exists within our borders. And we need to catch up there because energy is the base layer of all economic activity. And so we just need a hand up. Things are pretty fucked right now. We need to reset, get back to basics, and then rebuild from there. But that's politically untenable in many ways.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not in nearly as bad a position as Europe is in, particularly Germany. I mean, they are getting destroyed. China's about to put Germany out of business. And it's because they didn't stop building coal-fired power plants. And they figured out how to manufacture cars. Do you remember what happened to television prices once China joined the WTO?
I mean, for the big screens, I remember them being like $5,000 to $10,000 when they were first coming out. Now you can get one for $300. So
yeah, they fell something like 91% in 10 years. And China's about to do that to the auto industry. And I mean, it's going to be catastrophic for Germany, and very difficult for Japan and South Korea as well. Of course, you know, Americans, our car companies are already shit, so we don't have that much to lose. But I don't think that most people realize what an enormous amount of America's power and wealth comes from our trade deficit. I mean, America is a very rare country where we get to print money and people will send us very valuable manufactured products and commodities and services for paper. And that's a really extraordinary advantage that we have. And that's why I'm just very nervous about Trump doing anything to damage the credibility of the dollar and global trade. And you've seen previous administrations do stuff that was really dumb, like seizing the Russian central bank assets. And that's just a really bad idea. If you want people to hold dollars, which we do, then you need to treat them and their property with more respect than that. And I think that when you're the leading winner of the global trading regime, you should be the last people who are trying to find ways to tax it. That just doesn't make sense. But again, maybe it's bluster. Maybe it's just a negotiating tactic and all this will pass. But you can see this morning how the financial markets were reacting to the idea that these were going to be real threats and that they're going to be real impediments to trade. Markets were going to crash. And then I guess something happened recently, just the last couple of hours, where we backed away from the cliff with Mexico, and it looks like there's going to be further conversations with the Canadians at 3 o'clock or something. So I think everyone's sort of backed away from that precipice, but these are not good ideas.
What's up, freaks? This is Nat. You don't want to skip because Fold has a great offer for you. Everyone knows about Fold, the app where you can earn the most Bitcoin rewards for everyday purchases. I did this yesterday. Me and my wife, we use Amazon to buy quite a few things. And instead of just putting our credit card into Amazon and buying there, I put my credit card into Fold and buy an Amazon gift card and upload it to Amazon. Why? Because I get the credit card points and then I get sats back. Yesterday, I bought a gift card. I made 10,181 sats, about $10.50 in Bitcoin. And it's the only way to do it. If you want to stack Bitcoin passively, make sure you're using Fold gift cards. Fold has a special deal. I mentioned it earlier. If you're not shopping with Fold gift cards, you're leaving sats on the table. New users that sign up to Fold are going to get 20,000 sats in a welcome bonus with their first gift card purchase. So don't leave sats on the table. Sign up now at foldapp.com/Marty. Get those 20,000 sats, freaks. Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself, who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken the step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20.
And then going back to the dollar as a reserve currency, I saw you posted a video on X, at least this September, when the Fed reversed its rate hike cycle and started cutting rates. It seems like the market's been calling bullshit, particularly Treasury markets, with this divergence between the Fed rate cuts and the 10-year and 30-year, which have been creeping up towards 5% since September.
Yeah, I've been doing some basic math in my head. Let's say that the Fed does engineer a soft landing. Let's say that Trump is able to cut taxes, cut regulations, spur investment, spur economic growth. I hope he does, of course. And let's say it works. Let's say he ends his first year with, say, 3.5% nominal GDP growth. And we've had inflation running at between 3 and 4% now for a while. So that seems like a normal outcome. So that would get you to something like 6% combined GDP growth and inflation, something like 6 to 7%. And if you understand how the bond market works, you know, what you get paid in a bond is what you could earn in the economy. So if you have the economy growing at 3.5, you've got inflation at 3.5, then your bond rate, your 10-year rate should be at 7%. And that's how the markets generally do work when they're not being manipulated. Can you imagine what would happen if we had, you know, a year from now, we have 10-year rates at 7%. You've got mortgages at 9%. I don't think you're going to see stocks trading at 28 times earnings.
Well, you just flash back to 2023 and what led, well, what really exacerbated that crisis with the fact that bond yields were high, the par value of those bonds, which were the reserve assets of many of these banks, were underwater, and you had just a little spasm in the banking system where people were asking for their deposits, and it essentially led to a bailout with BTFP. And
yeah, there were a number of banks that failed because of they did a really dumb job understanding duration risk, which is hard to imagine. And the biggest casualty of all of this will be Bank of America. I mean, the losses currently in Bank of America are something around $100 billion. And the bank is just pretending that the losses don't exist because they're quote unquote going to hold the bonds to maturity. Well, maturity is 15 years down the road. And you can only hold them to maturity if you're solvent. And who in their right mind is going to leave their money at Bank of America getting paid 0.04%, which is nothing, while inflation's eating their savings alive, and they can instantly move that to an account at Interactive Brokers or anywhere else where you can get something closer to the 2-year Treasury bill rate, which is something like, what, 4.5% right now? Mm-hmm. So why on earth would you not do that this moment? And if your business model is that we hope our depositors don't notice that we're screwing them, that to me is not a real good business model.
Yeah, and I've been loosely following your analysis on Bank of America, and you highlight not only is that like 0.4%, like you shouldn't depend on that, but aren't they treating foreign depositors more favorably than domestic depositors as well?
Yeah. So, you know, foreign depositors in Bank of America are very large institutional clients, and those people are not stupid. So they're getting an overnight rate that's equivalent to about 3.5% annually. You know, yeah. So when Bank of America has to go and actually pay for deposits, that's what they're willing to pay. But they would go out of business tomorrow if they had to pay that on their entire roughly $1 trillion domestic deposits. They couldn't afford to pay that.
No. And do you foresee a 2023-like banking liquidity crisis materializing at some point this year? You mentioned commercial real estate earlier. And that's one thing I've been wondering is like what could be the wrench that's thrown into Trump's grand economic plans and the liquidity crisis, which has been really has existed since 2008. It's bubbled up time and time again, 2019, 2023. Like how much time is left on the banking liquidity shot clock this time around before something happens?
You know, so much of credit is just based on confidence. And Trump has done an incredible job of building confidence in the American system again. He has said, we're going to fix the government. We're going to fix the budgets. We're going to fix the debt. We're going to, you know, we're going to make America great again. And I think, you know, if I was a betting man, I would not bet against him. I think that he can probably get a lot done just because people are willing to give him more rope than they're going to give a president who was like Weekend at Bernie's. You know, he didn't instill confidence in anybody. So I actually don't think that we're going to have the kind of financial crisis that we could, But the point I make about all this is, it's not clear to me at all how America is going to get the $10 trillion in funding it needs from foreign investors in our treasury market this year. I don't know how we're going to do it, especially not when we're threatening tariffs and trade wars. And if there is any inkling of a default, or if there's any talk about something like that, I mean, the financial markets would absolutely crash and the dollar would absolutely crash. And right now the dollar is worth more against every other currency than it has been since the 1985 Plaza Agreement. Like, the dollar is woefully overvalued. Stocks are woefully overvalued. I would argue that risk assets like Bitcoin are probably overvalued too. So there needs to be a correction there, but I can't tell you how we bridge this chasm. If Trump executes perfectly, could you see stocks trading at a CAPE ratio of 35? Yeah, the bubble can keep growing. Who knows what the solution will be? He'll come out and say, we're going to have Trump bucks. You know, this isn't quantitative easing. This isn't inflationary. This is different because I'm doing it, not Jay Powell or something. You know, I just, it's hard to imagine exactly how he pulls a rabbit out of the hat. But I wouldn't bet against him. I wouldn't bet against Elon Musk. And look, there hasn't been a run on Bank of America yet. So maybe there won't be. And you can also, did you ever hear the story about what happened when the big bond trader at Goldman died?
No.
Well, it was an amazing thing. He got to heaven. I mean, there was like some kind of a glitch. You know, St. Peter wasn't watching. And the guy, somehow a bond trader, can you imagine a bond trader getting to heaven? I mean, that's a glitch. So he somehow got in there. And God was like, bro, I don't know how you slipped in here, but since you're here, what do you think interest rates are going to do next year? You know, and the moral is that nobody knows what interest rates are going to do next year. It's too complex of a market to even come up with a reasonable forecast. Usually, if you look at economic growth and inflation, you add them together, you can get a 10-year yield. But there's lots of things that can be different, like all the manipulation we've seen over the past decade. So I don't know. And if Trump is able to cut $1 trillion from spend, let's say the government's budget deficit goes from $7 trillion to $3 trillion. Okay, well, you know, maybe that just alone, the reduction in spending, maybe that does put us into a recession, or you know, not like a grinding recession, but like a, you know, just a very slow growth economy where we're growing at 2% and you've got inflation at 2%. Well, then long bond is at 4%, and then Bank of America isn't in trouble, and then stocks can go higher because rates are lower. I mean, that's certainly a reasonable outcome too.
Yeah, that's you can't predict the future, and that, I think, going back to what you're recommending, people 25% cash, hold some in gold. That's what I'm. This is a Bitcoin focused podcast, and that Bitcoin is something that I view. It's external to this. Once you see the government start printing a bunch of money, weaponizing the treasury markets, something that is a neutral, scarce asset in Bitcoin or gold makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned the Plaza Accords, and I think that's one thing many pundits have been basically saying may be in the works, is particularly with Scott Bessent in the position of Secretary of the Treasury. He's openly talked about the need for some sort of monetary reset at some point in the near future, in the next few years. And is that what is being set up here, is basically coming to the table, whether it's like the Plaza Accord or Bretton Woods, where China, Russia, the U.S. particularly get to the table. It's like, all right, what concessions do we need to make to sort of reset things and get back on sounder footing? And yeah, where does gold and Bitcoin fit into that situation?
Yeah, these are all great questions. And, you know, I can't prove it, but I see the big rise in gold in particular as a sign that there is going to have to be a global monetary reset. You've seen central banks around the world stop buying treasuries and start buying gold. and amounts that we haven't seen for a very, very long time. I think maybe even we've seen the most amount of central bank buying of gold ever in the past 3 years. And that really got started, again, because of the Russian sanctions and the decision to confiscate Russian central bank assets. I think the other central banks around the world were like, holy moly. I don't want to own a monetary-based asset that somebody can steal from me.
No. That was the dumbest move in geopolitical, in my life, I think, when it comes to financial markets and geopolitical moves. The freezing of Russian treasuries, while it seemed like the rah-rah thing to do in the moment, is a complete cell phone. How can anybody ever trust those markets once they know the U.S. government has a button? So, actually, you don't have that, I think it was $300 billion worth of reserve assets anymore. And the reset, how would that be manufactured? What concessions would be made? There was another thing I wanted to mention, but it completely just slipped my mind.
No one's going to come out and say any of this, but it seems very apparent to me that there will need to be a restructuring of the U.S. Treasury debt. I do not think it's plausible that we will ever actually repay 150% of GDP debt. So there'll either have to be financial repression, where we engineer inflation well above interest rates. So we're going to wipe out the middle class, which has already been wiped out since 08, as you know. I mean, I don't know politically how you can survive that.
No.
I think there would actually be a revolution in this country if real wages fell another 50% because we were monetizing $36 trillion in debt. And rich people kept getting richer because the real estate prices keep going higher and, asset prices keep going higher. Meanwhile, wages keep going lower. That's kind of what's happened in Canada, by the way. They're at their wit's end. The middle class has just been destroyed the last decade in Canada. So I don't know. I don't think that we're going to be able to do that politically. And then on the other side, if you tried to do it legitimately, how would you finance it? If you doubled income taxes, we'd still be running a deficit. And then you look at the incredible increases to payments that we owe under Social Security and Medicare over the next 20 years. None of this adds up. So there's going to have to be something. Somebody is going to have to eat it. And it's a real quandary. And what one of the things interesting is let's say, Trump is a lame duck president. He can't run for re-election. So let's say that, with enough rah-rah and bluster, he just keeps kicking the can down the road just far enough where it doesn't collapse. And then we end up in 4 years with, let's say, $50 trillion in debt. At what point do we have the Greece moment? Do you know what I mean by that? Nobody doubted Greece's accounting or their bonds for a decade, even though they were clearly bankrupt. And then one morning, everybody woke up and said, and started dumping Greece like it was on fire. And next thing you know, there's riots all over Athens and people are dying and burning buildings. I don't want to wake up in the United States one morning and the ATM machine doesn't work anymore. And the banks are closed and everyone loses whatever, 40% of their 401k or 40% of their bank deposits. And I have seen that happen. I've done a lot of business in Argentina, and that's exactly what they did in 2001. And truly, people were impoverished overnight because all of the money that they held in the banks, they held dollars. And overnight, all their dollars are gone and they were replaced with worthless pesos.
Yeah. No, that I mean, the $37 trillion on balance sheet, you mentioned the off balance sheet, so Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. As a millennial, you're looking at that, it's $190 trillion of liabilities that have been accrued in those welfare systems alone. And it's like, as a millennial, it's like, let's just why is this a third rail issue? I get why it's a third rail issue, but we need to rip the Band-Aid off, make it not a third rail issue. And I would be happy, draw a line in the sand at some age cutoff and say you're going to contribute up to here. And after that, you're not getting Social Security. Like, and you guys have 2-3 decades if you're in your 30s, 40s.
If there was any way to opt out of Social Security, everyone would have already opted out of it.
Yeah.
No one would willingly be a part of that system.
No. It's a literal Ponzi scheme.
Yes, it is. It's an intergenerational Ponzi scheme. And all the money, all the people who made all the money from it are already dead.
Yeah. And that, like, that going back to Trump, lame duck, like, that's one thing I would hope he can at least plant the seed to potentially begin that conversation at some point in the medium term, which is, this is something we have to confront. There's no way anybody's getting Social Security.
That's an issue for Congress. And there is no way that any congressman is going to get near that issue because he'll immediately lose his next election.
Yeah. It's funny. I was in the gym yesterday and I overheard two older gentlemen, definitely at or already retired or near retirement, discussing the tariffs and openly asking the question, what's this going to do for Social Security for my 401k? And you can tell some of the older generation is worried about what's going on. And if somebody's young, I definitely feel bad for people in that position if they're not well positioned. If anything bad were to happen, which I think the probability of something bad happen is just increasing as we expand the debt. But for people like who are my generation, I've got a young family. It's like, all right, we need to confront this and try to figure out how to fix things over the next 2 decades while I'm still working age.
I think anybody who's stupid enough to believe one fucking thing the government ever tells them is gonna get what they deserve good and hard.
Yep.
I don't have any fucking sympathy. How could you have lived in our country for the last 50 years and every single fucking thing the government told you about Vietnam, about, you know, about COVID, about anything. It's weapons always a fucking lie. Yeah. Always a lie. And for you to believe one fucking word they say, you must be the goddamn dumbest person in the whole fucking universe. So when the government tells you, my favorite, Obamacare. Remember, you can, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Remember that? Like, every single fucking thing they say is a lie.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why Bitcoin has been so popular and exactly why it'll probably continue to go up. Because their debt is your problem until you own Bitcoin. And then the moment you own Bitcoin, their debt is your greatest asset.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to have to flee from that system at some point and you're ahead of them.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC.
And just wait till insurance companies can buy Bitcoin. Whoa.
Well, insurance companies can't hold it yet, but you see things like Allianz from Germany buying 25% of one of MicroStrategy's convertible note offerings.
Exactly.
Like, they're beginning to get into it. And I think reinsurance.
MicroStrategy is making a killing on regulatory arbitrage. It's very smart what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, whether it's them or companies like Tether, they're literally weaponizing credit markets to accumulate more Bitcoin. MicroStrategy with the convertible notes and the at-the-market offerings, and now their preferred stock offering. Tether simply just holding short-term T-bills and rolling the income from those straight into Bitcoin. I mean, that's part of the Bitcoin thesis. You have this speculative attack of the fiat credit system. People are just going to take out debt, buy Bitcoin, and the amount of capital that exists in treasury markets, real estate, corporate bond markets, like that is the potential total addressable market for Bitcoin. So
let me ask you a question about all that. MicroStrategy has spent X amount of billions, and their average price of Bitcoin, I believe, is now $65,000.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it have been a much better investment for them just to mine the coins?
No. Mining is the most ruthlessly competitive market in the world. Somebody's been in it for 6 years. And so I think they've raised, I think, close to $50 billion at this point, maybe $40 billion. And so if they were to mine Bitcoin, they would have to spend a considerable amount of that cash raised to buy mining equipment, transformers, whether power purchase agreements, and then you have the time dilation from when you get that capital to when you can actually acquire all that equipment, plug it in, start mining Bitcoin, and you have to get paid back taking that cheap debt, particularly since it's 0% interest over 5 to 7 years.
That's a pretty good gig, isn't it? Where you can get money for free.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I might even be able to make a living if I could get all the money I wanted for free.
Well, that's what they're like MicroStrategy. Michael's talked about this publicly. I don't want to say they stumbled into it, but I think when he made his initial Bitcoin buys in 2021, he didn't envision the access to these structured credit instruments that he would have.
He couldn't have known how valuable the regulatory arbitrage that he can perform for other companies has become.
Yeah. And from what I understand with the convertible notes, particularly, is those credit funds love the volatility of the MicroStrategy stock because it creates potential for outsized credit returns. And he said this in his 2024 annual investor presentation, and if you look at the performance of those convertible notes, they outperform Bitcoin, not only other credit products, but I think one of them returned like 94%, which in the world of credit instruments is extremely high. And so,
it's funny to me when I see him announce a big convertible debt deal and the stock goes up. I'm like, I don't think those investors understand how that instrument works.
Well, that's the big fear mongering around MicroStrategy these days is they're completely levered and they're going to blow up at Bitcoin tanks. But if you actually look at how they've structured the convertible notes and the durations, more importantly, right now their leverage ratio is like 7%, I believe. And if Bitcoin fell to $13,500, they'd be able to sell it all and pay back their debt. And that's the convertible nature of the debt too into equity, like because the stock's so volatile, because it's tightly correlated with Bitcoin's volatility, that converts to equity at some point, and then you're deleveraging on the way up as the stock is increasing in value, and then you can just go tap the market again, and the market's there to provide the 0% interest rate debt because it's performing, and you have your credit benchmarks, and at some point you have this sort of tipping point where it's like, I've got to outperform the benchmark. So I need access to a stock with this volatility profile that actually converts to equity at some point and gets us a return.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with how that works. Yeah. I just don't think most of the equity investors are.
Yeah.
Basically what the convertible bet does is gives you a free call option on the stock, which allows you to short it completely impervious to risk.
Yeah.
And you know, if it goes up, it doesn't matter. You can convert later. If it goes down, then you can make a fortune.
Yeah. I think that's what they're doing, right? Because, but bring this back to whether it's Bitcoin or gold, this flight to neutral reserve assets that can't be controlled by governments. I remember what I wanted to bring up earlier, what slipped my mind was what's happening between LME and COMEX over the last 2 weeks. We're seeing this sort of supply crunch from LME with people calling their gold. Many of the pundits and headlines are saying that people are trying to call their gold in kind from London because they want to avoid the ramifications of tariffs. But I wonder if that's just a bad headline, and whether or not people are literally just calling their gold because they view this geopolitical atmosphere is something that's too risky for them. They'd prefer to hold it in person. But the fact that LME doesn't have the gold, or at least isn't delivering it in a timely manner, is a big signal, I think.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the connection is to all this and what's going on at USAID either. But it just seems odd to me that the largest global money laundering operation is being shut down at the same exact time that cryptos crash and that everybody wants gold. Now, listen, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but I don't think that's a coincidence.
No. The U.S., that's a shock to the system. The USA.
Oh, yeah.
You have Elon in the office with five Gen Zers just running through all the databases, shutting everything down. And then not only USAID, you had the long-term quasi-head of the Treasury, at least internally, quit abruptly because they simply asked the question, we need to pause all these payments and we need to know where they're going before we restart them. He had to resign because he was like, how can you take this power from me? You got to trust us. It's like, we actually want to verify what's happening here.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I went back into my public company as chairman about a year ago now, and I learned that you'll be surprised that there's a lot of fraud in online marketing.
Shocker.
Shocker. And I learned that we were routinely paying people. So we would sell a $99 newsletter through an online marketing partner, and we would immediately give that partner $149 because it costs more money to get a new subscriber than you get in the initial payment, and you hope to make that up over time with renewals. Well, if you're going to give an online marketer $149 in cash every time somebody buys a $99 newsletter, what do you think he's going to do?
Spin up a shell company and begin buying.
No. You think that he would go to India and pay people no dollars an hour to buy things at $99 and then fund their accounts with the money? And so we ended up with a lot of people who had never once opened an email or registered at our website or used any of the products. Like about 60% of the people we claimed that we thought we'd sold a newsletter to were actually just fraud. And so when I came in as chairman, again, I was like, I'd like to see how this works. And I said, look, we're not gonna have any more marketing partners unless we have met the people in person, unless we know their place of business address, right? Because they're all just fronts. And when we looked into it, they were like, there's 12 different online marketing companies. These businesses were incorporated at the same day in the same, law factory at the same time. And somehow within 6 weeks, they were able to grow their business assets to be worth $40 million in our marketing spend. Huh.
A little fishy.
A little fishy, yeah.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, all the employees, of course, were in on the deal because these terrible contracts that the previous management had made, where you're gonna give your marketers a percentage of the new business that you get. So they weren't asking any questions.
No, they're getting commission checks every quarter. Okay.
Yeah. You can imagine how popular I was around the office.
Well, it is crazy how this high velocity trash economy has created these perverse incentives to.
I'll give you just one last fact about this. It was so outrageous. We had an entity that I later had to shut down because of just unbelievable amounts of fraud. But this entity spent $95 million in 2021 on marketing. Normally what happens in a business like ours is you put a lot of money on the street, and then the next year you make it back because your advertising revenues go up, your renewal income goes up, the upgrades drive a lot more business, right? If you're going to invest $95 million in marketing, you expect to make a whole lot of money the next year.
Yep.
We invested $95 million in marketing, and we supposedly sold 500,000 plus subscriptions. And how much money did we make the next year in that business? That would be zero. That would be zero. And people were very, very hurt that I alleged that maybe there had been gross mismanagement.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've seen how this happens in just a, you know, a relatively small business like MarketWise. I mean, it's not, you know, we're not the Washington Post. We're not the New York Times. This is a pretty small publishing business. And even in a very small publishing business, you didn't have any, there were just no adults in the room. All the people who were supposed to be watching the hen house were the fucking foxes.
Yeah. And nothing of that applied to the federal government.
Oh my God. Can you imagine how much fraud there must be in those organizations? Because, you know, the further a dollar travels from where it was earned, the more likely it is to be stolen. So this is other people's other money. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like, it's tax dollars, and they're not even the congressmen or the senators who are responsible for it. They're just the cogs in the machine. And I guarantee you there's massive amounts of fraud. And then also this week, we just saw that Ukraine says, well, yeah, you did send us $177 billion, but we can't find $100 billion of it.
We have no idea where it went.
We don't know.
You may want to check Burisma to see if it's hiding in there.
I wonder why Ripple crashed 40% this morning.
Oh, that's one of the biggest scams in the world. And that's, I'm actually like excited that there could be some financial ramifications from this, but I hope we're only 2 weeks in, but the momentum that has been built in this 2 weeks does seem like there's something there. And it seems like we could potentially, closest we've ever been in my life to unveiling the rot that exists in the federal government.
That would be a truly life-changing consequence to this administration. If you could just make things like Social Security payments, if you had some way of putting them on a blockchain where you could eliminate fraud, it would be absolutely societally changing. Like do you remember the Paycheck Protection Program?
I remember the name. I forget what the mechanics of it were though.
I was living in Miami Beach at the time. And every single two-bit hustler in Atlanta stole, you know, $100,000 from that program the first 6 weeks it was available. And then they all drove to Miami to act like gangsters and rap stars. And they had to close down the causeways because there were so many people from Atlanta. They were, you know, what do they call it? Wilding, like just like raiding stores and hotels and just destroying the town because, you know, they saw people do that in a rap video. So let's go do that.
The PPP, it says PPP loans. There was a great thread on Twitter about this. They were Atlanta. They just spun up LLCs, took out all the money, went to Miami.
Came to Miami, wrecked my neighborhood.
It was like a crazy a sociological retrospective on Freakonomics. Not only that, if you look like the Alaskan king crab market went skyrocketed, like literally almost drove Alaskan king crabs extinct. And Casamigos was the drink of choice of the people spinning up these LLCs and taking the PPP money. And Casamigos,
and I'm sure the prices of rims went out the wazoo too. Gotta give me some rims. There was a run on gold teeth.
It was crazy. That's like an example of the government printing money and just doing something. Like, oh, this is gonna help stimulate the economy. People just completely abuse it. And
one of my favorite things is, when any time there's a terrible stock fraud, you know, inevitably some of my customers get caught up in it because they're active investors and they're on the internet and they get sucked into these things. And they, you know, they'll ask me if there's anything I can do to help, you know, because they think that there's, you know, I don't know. So I get memos like this 3 or 4 times a year from people who have been longtime customers, and they say, yeah, this guy was offering me 12% interest rates, and he said it was all, you know, money good and blah, blah, blah. And they send me like the prospectus or like the slide deck that they got. And there's always a picture of the guy. And it's always immediately clear. Like, this guy? You gave your money to this guy? No way. Huh, weird. Strange. He's from New Jersey. Huh. That's interesting. He has slicked back hair. Wow. He has a gold chain.
He's got
interesting.
He's got his hand on his chin with his Rolex flexing.
Right, yeah. That's very interesting. He doesn't have a college degree. That's interesting. Yes. He's worked at a dozen different brokerage firms in 20 years. Huh. That's really unusual. Gee whiz.
And if you go find three friends.
He has a lifetime ban from the securities industry, but he seemed like a nice guy.
And if you bring three friends to invest in his fund, you're going to get a higher interest rate on your
money. He has a home in Puerto Rico. Huh. It's like you could just check all the boxes. It's like cartoonish. And you're like, huh, you didn't, none of this just, didn't give you any pause.
Yeah. And again, going back to it, is this the great unveiling where all this grift gets laid bare and we can get back to sound economics? Who knows? Probably not. Don't short degeneracy in the United States.
Yeah, it's kind of like people ask me if they, you should sell Hershey stock because of the fat shots. And I'm like, I don't think so, man. I think fat is undefeated. I think fat people are going to be fat. They might go in those shots for a little while, get ready for the family picture. I don't know, maybe for the prom. Then they're going to go back to being fat as soon as they can.
Yeah, either that or at some point they're going to go blind or there's going to be a shit build up in their stomachs because they paralyzed them that. They're going to have to stop taking the medicine and get back to eating.
Or chocolate. They're going
to
be like, I took my shot, so now I can have my Hershey bar. I don't know. I think fat's undefeated. I think grift is undefeated. I would just love to see the federal government at least – not just be run by people who are crooks.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no way you could have thought that there wouldn't be unlimited amounts of fraud in that program. Like the whole idea that the government's going to lend companies money to keep people employed, that's just a fucking bad idea. You're not set up to do that.
No.
You're going to get robbed.
No, and I'm pulling this out. We may have just hit peak grift and fraud. This is the Biden laptop report. Like if you had access to this and you read through it, like it's very obvious to anybody with more than two brain cells that the company or the family that was just in the White House was completely corrupt to their core. And I hope that was at least at the federal government, the peak of the blasé corruption that exists.
The big guy.
The big guy.
The big guy's got to get his cut.
Yeah. Had to pardon his whole family on the way out for reasons.
By the way, he learned all that from Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not pretend that the Democratic grift machine started with Joe Biden.
No, what was it in the 90s? There was an airline that the Clintons were very close to.
The Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
Was the grift machine. And, an associate of mine, Frank Gistra, was one of the many beneficiaries of the grift machine. He would use Clinton to lean on small countries to give him mining concessions.
Interesting.
And then he would funnel the profits back into the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. You wonder how all these politicians get rich on civil servant salaries.
I don't wonder. How do you think they sell $50 million in books? Do you think it's mom and pop lining up at Walden at Books or Barnes and Noble? No, it's corporations who buy millions of copies of those books, throw the books in the dumpsters, and give the checks to the people. It's just complete ridiculous. Same thing with all the speaking engagements. You got paid $2.5 million to give a speech for Goldman Sachs, huh? Oh, really? You must be very, very wise. The bond traders desperately needed to hear from you.
Yeah.
And no.
A couple of weeks later, Goldman Sachs gets some favorable legislation passed. It is frustrating. But Porter, we're bumping up on time. I know I only had 60 minutes with you. This has been fascinating. You're an incredible mind, and I think your perspective on markets and how to position yourself is very valuable, not only to me, hopefully my audience as well. And I think incredible personality too. I love the jovial nature that you bring to all of this.
I just wanted to end with this. I think that natural gas is the most undervalued resource in the world.
Oh.
And I think I think that there is going to be an enormous explosion in wellhead electrical generation facilities. I think you're going to see so much of this all over Appalachia. I think you're going to see so much of this in Texas. I also think, and this is probably, you know, my natural gas bet, I think, is fairly sound. This one's a little more speculative, which is that I think you're going to see a huge return to coal. I think that the demands for electricity are going to absolutely shock people, because everything that we're going to want to do with AI and robotics is going to require baseload uninterrupted power. And there's just not going to be enough of it. I've been writing on X about the spice, the idea that the spice must flow, and that the countries and the policies that can deliver the spice. And what is spice? Spice is uninterrupted baseload electricity. The people and the institutions and the countries that get this right are going to become the leading economies of the next 50 years. Robotics is going to absolutely change everything about the way we live and work and communicate and travel. It's gonna be the next automobile revolution. The same thing that happened in our economy after the railroads from 1910 to 1950. That kind of change is going to happen in the second half of my life, so over the next 50 years. And to drive all that, we need unbelievable amounts of always available, always on electricity. And the greatest resource for doing that in America is coal. We have 250 years of known reserves at current production levels. Now, obviously, production is going to go up a whole lot, but there's a whole lot more coal out there. We're not going to run out of coal.
There's enough coal in Wyoming alone, too.
Of course. And so, you know, things like, people haven't thought about this yet, but like, there's a great business that owns coal royalties, NRP. You can look it up. It's a great investment. Things like railroads, things like old coal facilities. There is a huge opportunity for people who are ahead of this game, private equity, venture capital folks. Go get those old facilities back online, and there will be somebody to buy your power. And it's just, I know the ultimate answer is nuclear. Of course, I understand that. But it's going to take us at least 25 years to catch up with the technology to make nuclear affordable and safe and distributed. And in the meantime, we're going to need 10 times more electricity than we're producing right now. It's got to come from somewhere, and it's going to be natural gas first and then coal.
Well, you're speaking my language. As somebody, I run a venture capital firm with partners as well, and a lot of our exposure, or some material amount of our exposure, is to companies building upstream oil and gas infrastructure to electrify natural gas generation specifically. And then I sit on the board of another company. We helped revamp a coal plant in North Dakota, basically telling them, we'll buy your power off behind the meter to mine Bitcoin. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Bring coal back. The fear-mongering around coal being this dirty resource is complete bullshit. The facilities know how to actually combust the coal without emitting too much gas. And I don't even believe that CO2 is really driving climate change.
Combined cycle coal plant is the absolute best, cheapest way to generate electricity in the United States right now. And someday nuclear will catch it. But for now, the coal and the combined cycle is the cheapest way.
Yeah.
So that's what people are going to build.
Yeah. All you New York Times journalists that were telling people to learn to code 10 years ago, you need to learn to coal, because that's where the future is.
That's right. Because you don't need to know how to code anymore. You just need to have power to drive your AI. Yeah.
Do you know how to use a shovel? All right. Get out there and shovel some coal into the back of a truck. Porter.
That'd be fun to see.
Porter, this was great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, listen, I'd love to come back. I really enjoyed the chat, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it again. Peace and love, freaks. Take care.